Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Learning about your family history has never been easier. Advances in DNA testing and online genealogy websites have made climbing that family tree the equivalent of just a few clicks and a postage stamp. Journalist and author A.J. Jacobs a few years ago was spurred himself when a stranger contacted him from halfway around the world to show how he was part of a 70,000-plus person tree. The story of his journey is a topic of his new book entitled It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. A.J. Jacobs joins us by phone. Welcome to the show, A.J., or should I say welcome to the show, Cousin A.J.? I don't know.
I would love to hear Cousin A.J., and if I could call you Cousin Ann, that would be delightful.
Why do you think people are so, we know it's a billion-dollar industry now, why are people so interested in this?
Well, I think that, first of all, like you said, it is easier than ever. This is the golden age of genealogy. And secondly, there's just this hunger to find out who you are, what is your identity. And people think that finding out your ancestry will help them answer that.
In your travels through your family tree, did you learn anything about yourself?
I did. What I found most inspiring was just reading about, weirdly, the failures, the ups and downs of my family. How one of my great-great-grandfathers ran for Congress on the Bull Moose Party ticket and got like 1.5% of the vote. And yet he persisted, as they say, about our
yeah, right.
But yes, just the idea that you can have grit, your family goes through ups and downs, failures and successes. And that's what I want to teach my kids, this idea of perseverance.
It's a billion-dollar industry, which means, call me a skeptic, that there could be fraud out there.
Oh, well, yes, they are. I mean, for all of the history of genealogy, there has been fraud and mistakes. So back in the 1800s, there was a group of notoriously fraudulent genealogists who they would basically tell rich people how rich Americans, oh, you are related to the Duke of Marlborough, or it was just sort of fantasy fulfillment. And they made these very intricate maps that are still being unraveled today.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about genealogy today with a guy who climbed a family tree, pretty much went around the world. He's a journalist, author. His new book is entitled It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. If you have a question or comment for A.J. Jacobs, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So does anybody regulate this industry?
Well, yes and no at the same time. Especially the DNA testing is very new. And as with all new industries, they're still figuring out how to regulate it. Because just like every technology, there are pros and there are cons. I mean, there's tremendous, it's fascinating, but there's also dangers to taking a DNA test.
Such as?
Well, there's the privacy concern. I mean, these companies are very good with privacy now, but you can imagine in the future a hacker getting in and having access to your whole genome. That could be a problem with insurance, et cetera. But I don't want to paint too negative a picture. I say I am an optimist about technology, and I do think that this will be good for the world when it all shakes out.
You talked with Randy. Is it Schoenberg or Schoenberg?
Actually, it is Schoenberg.
Schoenberg.
That is the correct fancy pronunciation.
He's a lawyer best known for getting the Woman in Gold painting from the Austrian government after it was stolen by the Nazis. Why did you call him? Your brother-in-law, I think, told you to call him.
Yes, he is one of the experts in this new revolution in genealogy, and there are a few of these revolutions going on, but one of them is fascinating. It's that there is what's called a world family tree, And it's not just hundreds of people or thousands of people. It is millions of people all connected on the same tree from dozens of countries, all continents, including Antarctica, hundreds of ethnicities. And you can go on and without too much effort, link yourself to millions of people. And sometimes the connections are, they're almost like 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Like I got up, you can punch in, for me, I punched in Barack Obama and found out that he is my sixth great aunt's husband's brother's wife's seventh great nephew. So we're practically brothers, very close. But the idea is this connection, and it's being done through partly through DNA tests, millions of DNA tests, and partly through this idea of collaborating, almost like a wiki, where mm-hmm. there are thousands of people around the world, each contributing a little puzzle piece to the big picture.
What does it look like when you go online to this place? Where do you go and what do you do?
There's a series of services sort of competing to be the first to connect the entire world, like all 7 billion people. And they've got a ways to go. They're up. The biggest is about 200 million, still pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go on and you type in your, you input your grandparents and great grandparents if you know them.
Mm-hmm.
And the computer will search to see if there's any overlap with someone else's family tree. And the services, just so you know, are genie.com, Wikitree, Family Search, a couple of others I have in my book and the appendix, how to do it. And, yeah, the idea is with some of them, at least, you put in, you can search your friend from camp, your friend from college, your wife even, and figure out how you guys are related.
Yeah, you're related to your wife through more than marriage.
Yeah, we both took the 23andMe DNA test. And as one of their services, they send you a list of hundreds of people that you share enough DNA with to be considered your blood cousin. And my wife turned up on my list of blood cousins. Now she's sixth or seventh cousin.
Mm-hmm.
So we're, you know, our kids are fine. And they all have just the one head. But yeah, that is one of the surprise. You're going to get some interesting information, some you want, some you may not want.
How much information? So you just kind of get, you said sometimes, you might want to give them your DNA as well as your family tree or as much as you know of it?
That's right. These online services can, they can sort of use both types of information and combine them to make these very powerful trees. And yeah, so you've got, and you've got newspapers. Now, more than ever, you can access thousands of newspapers going back hundreds of years, all online.
Is anybody in a disadvantage when it comes to plugging into something like the, you know, this global, this world family tree?
Right now, it is lopsided, unfortunately. So there are more, like the Mayflower contingent has much better records, and African American people and Asian people are not as well represented. The folks are hard at work trying to rectify that and make it more balanced. But yeah, right now, unfortunately, it is a little off kilter.
Randy Schoenberg, in when you wrote about him, he called genealogy addictive. And I'm wondering, obviously, you wrote a book about it, but are you going to pursue this, continue to pursue it now that you've written your book?
I am. I mean, partly, I love the idea that we're all one big family. I mean, I just find that it's such a simple but profound idea we were told as kids. But partly, it's just learning these amazing stories of your family. And everyone has them. It's just a matter of digging them up and interviewing your grandparents or parents. And I was lucky because my grandfather had a bunch of information I didn't know. But I was given by the FBI. They were very helpful in my search. I got a Freedom of Information Act, and they sent me 400 pages on my grandfather, not because he was a gangster, but because he was very close with Martin Luther King. He was a lawyer for Martin Luther King, and the FBI, not a big fan of King. So I learned all sorts of things about my grandfather just from this, from the government.
There was an Adam and Eve, at least in DNA terms. What's known about them?
Yes, I wrote a book about the Bible, and I don't believe in the literal version of Adam and Eve, but scientists do talk about what they call Y-chromosomal Adam and mitochondrial Eve. And these were two folks who are about 2,000th great-grandparents. And we all, every person on Earth, you, me, Miley Cyrus, a dentist in Vietnam, we all have a bit of their DNA in us. And they were roamed about 200,000 years ago. They roamed the plains of Africa. And they weren't the first humans. There were thousands of other wannabe Adams and Eves. But these are just the two whose DNA has survived in every human.
Last count, when I read your book, the World Family Tree that you were looking at was 70.5 million, and now you say there's a large one up to 200 million.
A larger one. That depends on the service. And so the 70 million one I like for various technical reasons. But yeah, these things are just exploding exponentially. And as I say, the hope is in 10 to 20 years, we'll have one big family tree for everyone on Earth, which is just mind-boggling to me.
Why is that a good thing, do you think?
Well, I actually do think it's overall a good thing. There are some dangers, but one is just this idea that if we see concretely how we are all connected and related, we will hopefully treat each other with a little more kindness, or at least a little less horribleness. And there is some empirical evidence that this might happen. There's a great study by Harvard last year where they took Israelis and Palestinians, and they showed them how closely they were related. And the group that was showed how closely they were related treated each other with more kindness, was more open to negotiation. So, and I've seen this in my own life. It's a slightly more trivial example, but I always hated the TV personality Judge Judy. I just thought she was obnoxious and abrasive. But then I found out she's my eighth cousin. And rationally or not, it changed my perspective. I thought, you know what? She's not so bad. She's just Judge Judy, probably a sweetheart underneath. So it's this idea, the Judge Judy effect, the family bias, the social scientists call it, taking the family bias and applying it to the whole world.
She may be Judge Judy, but she's my Judge Judy.
That's exactly right. Well put.
We are talking about family trees, genealogy. My guest is A.J. Jacobs. He's a journalist and author. His new book is entitled It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. If you have a question or comment, want to share your own story about family genealogy, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or your comment there. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about family trees this hour and how online resources have made the journey of genealogy easier and why a world family tree is important. Still with us is journalist and author A.J. Jacobs. His new book is entitled It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. So, A.J., you're related to a lot of famous people, right?
That is true, as are you, Ann.
Well, how does that work? I mean, they pop up and you just recognize their name and you know that it must be...
Right. Well, using these tools, you can pretty much connect to anyone. As I say, it's like one big game of 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. And for my book, I wanted to interview a lot of interesting family members to get their take on family. And I found it an incredibly useful social network. So, for instance, I wanted to interview George H.W. Bush. So I called his press agent and said, I'd love to interview the president. She said, well, he's not doing any interviews. I said, I realize that, but I am his third cousin, four times removed, nephew's wife's second cousin. And she said, well, in that case, let me see what I can do. And it actually worked. I got to interview George H.W. Bush about what it's like to be a patriarch. So, yeah, it is incredibly useful. Speaking of which, I just wanted to go back to what you had asked before of why this might be a good thing.
Uh-huh.
Aside from being a great social network, I wanted to add one other, I think, very relevant point, which is the idea that we are all mixed race, that there is no real such thing as racial purity. This was Henry Louis Gates, was one of the big advisors on my book, and he talks about how the average African American has 24% European DNA, and we're all like that. We're all mutts, and we should revel in our muttishness. And there are actually white supremacists who are taking these tests and finding out they're part Jewish or part African American, and having very vehement reactions. Some are in denial and say, oh, no, this is just a conspiracy, multicultural conspiracy. And others are having sort of a Hollywood-like revelation that, you know what, this is not a good way to look at the world. And we should not focus on our differences, but instead on our commonalities. So that's another way. I hope it will be a good thing. Now, I do talk in the book about how it could backfire and be a bad thing and make people more focused on their tribes and their percentages. But I'm hopeful it'll be good.
Well, it's hard to imagine people being more focused on their tribes than they already are. but be that as it may. So what did President Bush say when you talked to him about it?
Oh, well, he loved it. I explained that he was actually moderately close cousins with Bill Clinton, which he liked. And his wife, who was there, Barbara Bush, said that she had always considered Bill Clinton a son from another mother. So it made sense. But they loved the idea of us all being one family.
Alan in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Alan.
Hi, how are you? How are you this morning?
Good.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Hello?
Yep, you're on the air.
Hello?
Okay, we'll check with Alan. We don't know what's wrong, but we'll double check with Alan. You decided to host a reunion, which the whole thing just cracked me up, and I admit I jumped to the back of the book to see if it was real. It was a real thing.
I forgive you. You're my cousin. Yes. Yeah. Well, that was it. Part of the book is about this quest to when I realized I had millions of cousins, I said, you know what? Why don't I throw a party, a reunion for every one of my cousins? And so I did. I invited 7 billion people. We did not get 100% turnout, but we got thousands of people, and it was just the oddest collection, the strangest cocktail of humanity, because we had celebrities and scientists and a priest, a rabbi, and a Buddhist monk. And so it was like a joke. And we had Sister Sledge, the actual Sister Sledge, come
right
and sing We Are Family, and thousands across the world at different ones of these global family reunions singing along. So part of the book is about that quest and the joys and stress of it.
Why did you think it was important to do that?
Well, I just loved the idea and the message, and there were many times throughout the year and a half planning that I asked the very same question you did. Why did I think this was a good idea? Because I had no idea the scale of throwing a party for 10,000 people. But I did love the way it came out, and I'm not really a big hugger myself, but it was fun to see spontaneous hugs between people who were formerly strangers, but now calling each other cousin. It was just, it was a fun and weird and for me stressful, but overall good event.
You had some pretty famous people show up. Did you know that in advance that they would?
Oh, yeah. Well, I invited, I figure, you know, we're all cousins, but the people might be interested in seeing some of their more notable cousins. So we had an odd collection. You know, we had people like David Blaine the Magician and Dr. Oz. And but we also had a great Harvard geneticist who is right now trying to resurrect the woolly mammoth using DNA techniques. So, and by the way, the woolly mammoth is, of course, our distant cousin, since all animals and plants derive from the same line of DNA from our 1.2 billionth great-grandpa or grandma.
Let's see if we can try Alan again. Hi, Alan. You're on the air.
Well, hi. Here I am. Thanks for taking me back.
Sure.
I wanted to share. I have a very, very strange family history published in the 1880s that was at the height of the anti-Irish prejudice. And although my first ancestor was 17th century, there's lots of spurious links in there, so may not be true, who came from Ireland. There's a careful explanation that he's not really Irish because his wife's name was Elizabeth, and she couldn't possibly be Irish. Mm. And then throughout my family history, my male ancestors keep marrying women with names like Bridget O'Malley, and there's always a careful explanation of why she's not really Irish.
Mm.
So it's an example of the anti-Irish prejudice of the time.
Interesting.
That is interesting. And it's also interesting because a lot with DNA testing, a lot of our family trees are going to be upended. So a lot of the myths and lore will be exposed. And one chapter I have in the book is about a man whose DNA test, he grew up in the Midwest with 9 siblings, and they all took DNA tests as adults and found out that none of them were biologically related to the father that they all assumed they had.
Weird.
So they had 9 different fathers. It was like a Maury Povich show times 9. And it was actually, though, it was inspiring in one way because the father, who was biologically none of their dads, still treated them with love and respect as if they were, which I found a great lesson. And family doesn't have to all be about DNA.
Alan, thanks a lot for that call. John in Columbus, you're on the air with author A.J. Jacobs. Hi, John.
Oh, hi, Ann. Mr. Jacobs, have you ever tried to compare and contrast like Ancestry versus 23andMe? I mean, did one give you more information than the other? Or if you did both of them, did one reinforce the other?
That is a great question. Thanks for asking. And yeah, I did take all of them, so which ate up almost my entire book. there are quite a few. Mm-hmm. But the general idea is that they are relatively accurate, but it's not a science at all. And I'll give you one example. Ancestry DNA, I took it about 5 years ago, and it came back that I'm mostly Jewish, which I figured, but that I was 14% Scandinavian. And I was kind of excited. I told my wife, you know, let's get out the cross-country skis and have some some herring. I was like, I like the little variety. But over the years, it's now gone down to below 1%. So I've lost my Swedish ancestors tragically. And the reason is because they estimate these according to the database, and their database of other people's DNA had too many Scandinavian people. It was off. It was lopsided. So people were coming back far more Scandinavian. So the general idea is take it with a grain of salt. The good news is it's getting better. The more people who take it, the more accurate their databases will be.
Thank you, John, for that question. If anyone else has a question out there, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're talking about genealogy today with journalist and author A.J. Jacobs. His new book is entitled It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. Your sixth great-grandfather is a famous rabbi. You wrote about him. Why was this especially important to you?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, there's this idea, you've got people who say, oh, I'm the 14th great-grandchild of Henry VIII, and they tote this around like it's a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the numbers, everyone is probably related to royalty. It's just you have so many thousands of ancestors. Because, look, you have two parents, four grandparents, and it just goes up and up. So by the time you're at the 10th generation, you've got hundreds of thousands. So it's all about sort of preferentially picking, oh, I'm that you have this fancy rabbi or fancy pope. Well, I guess popes don't.
Well, technically, I guess that might be one of the things that we discover down the road.
There you go. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The Renaissance popes. But anyway, the idea is you also have thousands of people who worked on the dock or who were embezzlers or picked up horse manure in the street for a living. So we should be a little more aware that we all come from great and we all come from not so great. And I like it as a way of democratizing this.
If you're Jewish, there's a greater chance that you're related more closely to other Jews, right? Is that the same with other religions?
Well, it's certainly the same with other populations. It's called endogamy. That's the nice word for inbreeding.
Okay.
And there's especially interesting case in Iceland. They have a small population, and they all married each other. And in fact, there is an app, like an iPhone app in Iceland, that you go on a date with someone, and you're supposed to, as they say, bump phones before you bump in bed. So the app will tell you how closely you're related to that person. And so if it shows up as first or second cousin, you might be more loath to continue a romantic relationship. So yeah, there are groups that interbreed a lot, but the overall trend in the world is intermarriage and breaking down of these ethnic groups.
An email from Amy, she asks, can you please address how sperm donation plays into the new family tree?
Oh, well, I love that question, because part of the book is all about how this notion of family has changed more in the last decade than it has in hundreds of years. And it's just going to get more complicated. And that's because of gay marriage and open adoption. And sperm donors is another great point. You have now groups like Facebook groups of people who are half siblings through a sperm donor who had, 25, 30 kids. And they actually, there's a name for them, diblings, donor siblings. So there's a whole new vocabulary. And this is very interesting to me, this idea of broadening the notion of family. I'm actually not bothered by it. In fact, I embrace it as long as there's enough love to go around and discipline and structure. I think family can come in many varieties. And, as my eighth cousin three times removed, Hillary Clinton says, it takes a village. So for me, the more people who are involved in the family, the better.
Why would people be bothered by it?
Well, I mean, you have, of course, a large percentage of the country who is upset by the breakdown of the traditional two-gender, 2.4 kids family, with gay marriage and all that. So it's this idea of the definition of family becoming less strict that people don't like.
email from Keely writes, my great-great-grandmother was Cherokee. She was dropped off on her doorstep by her displaced brothers. So she lived with a white family. And on the census, it is very clear that they originally wrote I for Indian and then brought a W over it for white.
Huh.
My family has always been curious about how to prove the Native American blood in our veins, which we are very proud of. Is there a way to do this? Would a DNA test prove this?
Well, a DNA test is an excellent first step. Yeah, highly recommend it. And as long as you're ready for possible disappointment, because we do get a lot of people who think that they might have some Native American, but turns out that they don't. That, to me, is also one of the most amazing parts of this new revolution in DNA, just finding out your mix and how that affects your identity. Well, I had one woman I talk about in the book who, she was a redhead, freckles, very white complexion, found out she was about half Latina, and she actually did not like her Irish family and Irish side and decided to identify as a Latina. So it gets very complicated with identity politics and how you decide who you are.
Well, that's just what you choose. I mean, are there legal definitions?
Well, it's very murky. That's exactly right. It is what you choose. I think with Native Americans, there is a. It depends, I think, on the laws, but. This woman also had 6% Puerto Rican Native American ancestry, and she actually identifies as a Native American now and does the rituals and finds meaning in it. And it's complicated because on one hand, that's great. I love that she's found something she's comfortable with. On the other hand, there are going to be people who say she's culturally appropriating. She only has 6%. So this is going to be one of the big issues that this technology brings up.
Well, did the issue of self-identity come up in terms of like the Rachel Dolezal controversy, the woman in the Northwest?
Sure. Well, that absolutely. I think this is just going to make that much more complicated, how people identify. And I am actually on the side of being a little more liberal with how you choose your identity, because I actually think these identities should be held loosely because that helps erode tribalism. Of course, I see the problems with that because you don't want to appropriate another culture. So it's very complicated. And I don't have the correct answer.
I'm kind of interested in what would happen in those areas of the world where it is literally tribally, the conflicts are tribal, and what would happen if people there found out how much they were connected?
Exactly. And I have a section in the book, for instance, in our part of the world, we had the Hatfields and the McCoys, mm-hmm. who were incredibly closely related. I mean, there was a lot of shared DNA. And I talked to a descendant of the McCoys who actually organized the Hatfield-McCoy reunion on the premise that they are actually one family. And it mostly worked. So instead of shooting each other, this was a few years ago, they had a softball game and had some picnics. There was some tension because the Hatfields accused the McCoys of cheating at softball and bringing in a ringer. So, there is still some tension, but it's better than killing each other.
Exactly. My guest is A.J. Jacobs. He's a journalist and author. His new book is entitled It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. If you have a question or comment for A.J. Jacobs, he spent about 3 years researching this book and also throwing a really big party for his relatives. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The 1979 hit by Sister Sledge continues to be a dance floor mainstay at weddings, bar and bat mitzvahs, and other family gatherings. The group also performed for one of the more unusual family gatherings of A.J. Jacobs' closest 1,000 or 10,000 relatives. We're talking about family trees this hour, how online resources have made the journey of genealogy easier, and why a world family tree is important. Still with us, journalist and author A.J. Jacobs. His new book is entitled It's All Relative, Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. AJ, pretty quickly into the process of all of this, you decided you wanted to have a get-together.
Right. True. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just kind of wondering why. Are you just that kind of a guy? You like to have a party?
Well, I often ask myself the same question. Weirdly, I am, I think, naturally an introvert, but my wife is an extrovert, and she has tried to convert me, and I thought one way to convert might be to just dive in and try to meet all of my billions of cousins. So it was sort of a radical scheme to make myself more linked and less of an island.
Did it work?
Well, it did, and it didn't. It did. In that I was certainly every day I interacted with people, and I actually think that I am happier and humans are happier when they are social. We are social beings. So in that sense, yes, it was helpful. I met amazing people and learned all these astounding stories. But at the same time, it was also incredibly stressful. It was like, my wife and I have a son, and we held a bar mitzvah for him, and that was like, 100 people, and that my wife did everything, and here I was trying to throw basically 100 bar mitzvahs simultaneously, and it was overwhelming.
So how did people respond when they received the invitation? How did you issue the invitation?
Oh, various ways. Some were, these services will give you a list of hundreds of cousins who you never knew about, and also the family tree reveals thousands more cousins. So I would email people out of the blue, and I say, I know this sounds strange, but I am your fourth cousin, and I'd love to invite you to the biggest family reunion ever. And it was hilarious because some of them would write back and say, that is my worst nightmare. I never want to hear from you again. which I was like, I understand. Okay, yeah. Fine. You're my cousin. I still love you. But some of them were remarkably receptive and said, I love this idea. And what a nice thought that we are all related. And I'm sure I have fascinating cousins who I'd like to meet. So it was a mixed reception, but we certainly got enough positive that we could pull this off.
How far away did people travel?
Oh, Bulgaria, South Africa, New Zealand. And as there was simultaneous reunions around the world, so there were 40 simultaneous reunions that were connected via the internet, and we all sang We Are Family with Sister Sledge at the same time. So I think I'm still recovering. It's been a year and a half, and I'm still recovering, but still amazed that, and I should say, it was very small percentage was me. It was that these volunteers got so into the idea and so enthusiastic that they organized and put it together. And that's what I love. It sort of reminds me of Wikipedia, which for all its faults, is an amazing thing. People do it for free, mm-hmm. and it has made, I think, the world better. But it sort of upends my traditional notion of capitalism that you need people only will do things if you pay them. If they like the cause, they will do it for free.
Let's take a couple calls. Julianne and Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Julianne.
Hi. I had a question with regard to, for example, Hillary Clinton is my eighth cousin once removed.
Mm-hmm.
First is, what does removed mean in that scenario? And secondly, how does one get to be a second or a third cousin? And thank you for your answer. I'll take it off the air.
Thanks, Julianne.
Thanks, Julianne. Yeah, this took me quite a while to figure out, but I think I got a handle on it. The second cousin is actually quite simple. Your first cousin, you share a grandfather. Second cousin, you share a great-grandfather. Third cousin, a great-great-grandfather. So that's simple. The removed is actually has to do with what generation you are. So if you are one generation away, you are once removed. So your mother's first cousin is your first cousin once removed. But it gets kind of tricky. I actually have a chart, or you can look on the internet, and they have a very helpful chart so you can figure out what the exact names are. And I will say it varies from language to language. Some languages, like Hawaiian, everyone's a cousin. Everyone is, you know, that's it. Your uncle, everyone just makes it simple. Others are specific. So like your mother's aunt and your mother's sibling and your father's sibling have different names. They're not both aunts. So it's very dependent on your culture.
Are there some cultures that have kept better records than others?
Oh, absolutely. And I would say the superstars of family history are the Mormons. They are sort of the Golden State Warriors, and they have a tremendous amount of information that they collect all the time. Thousands of volunteers around the world just going and scanning documents. Here's a crazy statistic. The Mormon Church every year gathers more information about families than is in the Library of Congress. Every year they add more than is what is housed in the Library of Congress.
Why is it important to Mormons to do the genealogy thing?
It is part of their theology, and I'm going to totally oversimplify and probably warp it a little, so apologies. But the basic idea is that in the afterlife, you need to know who is in your family, because that's how you end up in the afterlife with them. You are bonded to them. So for theological reasons, it's incredibly important. One thing that I do love and admire about the Mormons is that they have made this information public. They are not hoarding it and secretly. You can get it by going to their libraries or even online at familysearch.com.
Fred in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Fred.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I was thinking about getting a DNA test, but then I read that some of them, like Ancestry, I believe, when you sign away your rights to your DNA, that they have the ability to sell it and make any money off of it that they can. And I heard the same thing about 23andMe, and I'm wondering, is there a DNA company out there that, you know, protects your privacy?
That is a great question. And yeah, it definitely depends on the service. And one service that I recommend is called the Personal Genome Project. And it's a Harvard study, and it is you donate your DNA for free. They will give it to you for free. So you don't have to pay the $99 fee. The sort of catch is that that information then becomes available to scientists to help them develop cures for disease. So they don't sell it. They just give it away freely. It's anonymized, so no one knows it's your DNA. They just know it is DNA. I like that because it's all about making the world a better place and helping to cure diseases. The downside with all of these things is, as I say, who knows what's going to happen in the future? Maybe a hacker will be able to figure out it is your DNA and your insurance premiums will quadruple because you have some DNA mutation. It's a very complicated issue. I have decided the pros outweigh the cons, so I like giving my DNA to science.
He gives it away freely, Fred.
I give it away freely.
Thanks, Fred, for that call. What you know, when we talked about the whole genealogy thing being addicted, you say you're still recovering a year and a half later from the party, but you're still interested in genealogy. I mean, I guess I kind of wonder, given all the work you've put into this, how much more do you need to know?
Well, it's funny because you have so many ancestors and so many offshoots that there's always more stories to find. After the book went to press, I actually found a second cousin who was deeply involved in the Teapot Dome scandal, and not just a sort of bribery, but like actual blackmail and adultery with the president's inner circle. And it was all very exciting because I do think there's an advantage, as I said, to having black sheep in the family, because it makes you realize we all have our good and bad. We all come from greatness and people who are not great at all. And we should remember that, keep humble. So I love the stories. I am a history buff as well. Mm-hmm. And it gets my kids involved in history. You know, now it's personal. Now, weirdly, my kid was learning about the Teapot Dome scandal in school, and now he had this really personal link to it.
I think that would be an interesting aspect of all of this, to get kids involved in history, to start having them study their own history.
Absolutely. And I think more and more that is happening. For me, it's been hugely helpful with the kids. Even Albert Einstein, who we are related to, you know, as you said earlier, Jews are generally quite closely linked. Mm-hmm. And that was just, you know, he's not just some dead white guy with crazy hair. He's Uncle Albert, I try to say, you know, look at what Uncle Albert did and the amazing things. And it's motivating.
You were really jazzed when you found out you had an ancestor that fought in the Civil War.
I was. This was, you know, as I said, I'm Jewish, and of course Jews fought in the Civil War, but I never gave much thought to it. Mm-hmm. 7,000 fought for the Union and 3,000 for the Confederacy. Mine was on the Union side. I mean, the funny thing is, the more I dug, the less impressive his feat became. Right. He was only in it for 6 weeks. He never saw a battle. He left for some unspecified reason. His grandkids made fun of him and said, oh, you were in the Civil War for a day, which I actually loved. We have actual archives of his grandkids in letters making fun of him and him taking it with good humor. And that, I think, is lovely to be that. That's a good lesson, that you can make fun of yourself and your flaws. So that's what I took away and told my kids.
Were there any other big surprises?
Oh, well, there were tons, sure. I mean, I was surprised to find out I was related to people like Daniel Radcliffe, and I got to meet him and hear his family story, which is amazing. That's what I love, these stories. His grandmother, his great-grandmother, was basically kidnapped and taken to South Africa, and this man tried to commit her to an insane asylum, and her mother had to fly to South Africa and escape with her in the middle of the night. So it's just a remarkable story. Someone should option Daniel Radcliffe's family history.
AJ Jacobs, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time. It's by the way, a very fun book to read. You're a great humor writer, and it's been a blast.
Thank you, Cousin Ann. That was great to hear.
Cousin AJ Jacobs. He's a journalist and author. His new book is called It's All Relative: Adventures Up and Down the World's Family Tree. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.